Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode.
How to run ABM on a budget. Welcome back to a fresh episode of BreakingB2B.com. I'm your host, Sam Dunning. And if you want to join thousands of legends enjoying past episodes or to try out our weekday email, head over to BreakingB2B.com. So today I've got Mason Cosby joining me. Mason's the founder over at Scrappy ABM. We're going to be diving into what kind of B2B organization should be investing time, cash, or resource into ABM, the minimum amount of spend or resource you're going to need to apply to make it happen, and some practical plays so you can start running ABM from today. So with that, welcome to the show, Mason. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing well, and I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
No worries, dude. Likewise, looking forward to the show. So with that said, diving straight in as we always do, ABM, account-based marketing, what kind of business is really a good or a bad fit when it comes to running ABM?
Yeah, so I mean, I think in the context of B2B, we all know when we're talking about ABM, like you've got to be a B2B organization because ABM is account-based marketing. So if you're trying to do account-based, it means you need to focus on a company. So it's not contact focused. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, generally speaking, you need a dedicated sales team. This highly requires a partnership between marketing and sales to be effective. So you need a dedicated sales team. You also, generally speaking, and there's an asterisk on this, I'll explain the asterisk here in a moment, but generally you want to have a clear product market fit. And people are going to be like, why is there an asterisk on that? I'll explain. You want to have clear product market fit, because if you're getting really targeted and really specific, you need to know the exact problems you solve and how you solve them for those kinds of organizations. If you don't have product market fit, it's really difficult to get nuanced and personalized in your messaging. You also need, generally speaking, a 50K ACV, meaning average contract value. So if you don't have at least $50,000 of a deal value, ABM is probably not the right fit. You're really focused on high quality opportunities here versus a quantity of opportunities. And then lastly, it's generally speaking a longer deal cycle. There is a lot of involvement on both the marketing and sales side. I would say, generally speaking, you need a 90-day sales cycle in order to justify the investment in ABM, because the other side to ABM is you can actually run in-pipeline programs that should help speed up your deals. So all that to say, those are kind of the requirements around building an ABM program. The one asterisk I want to add would be vertical specific organizations. If you are serving only one niche, only one kind of customer, then you should probably just build an ABM program. We're working with a client right now that literally their total addressable market is 500 accounts. That's it. It's like, why would you run anything else? Versus, you know, I'm an ABM provider. I could work with any B2B company, really, hypothetically. So I don't necessarily need to be running an ABM program until I found the exact kind of client that is my ideal client profile, where I solve the problem the best for them specifically. So that'd be the asterisk on who ABM is for.
Appreciate the rundown. So essentially a B2B company with a sales team, clear product market fit, ideally 50 grand or plus average contract value, and then typically 90 days or longer sales flow. And then with that added niche, if you are in a small total addressable market or perhaps have a really tight niche, then it might make sense too. Sweet. That's a nice concise summary. So moving forwards, when it comes to ABM, I think when I've spoken to folks about it, maybe businesses that we're going to help with their website or their SEO and so on, and when they've mentioned ABM, it's always been a bit of a weird one. Like, some folks are like, nah, ABM's way too expensive, or we don't have the resource in house, or it just never really worked. Like, we dipped our toe in the water, it didn't work. But let's bust any myths and set the record straight. What's like a minimum budget as one point, and then, or if you're going to do it internally, like a minimum amount of resource, Mason, that you'd need to actually get some results with ABM?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, a lot of sellers are actually doing quote-unquote ABM because they've got their account list. So honestly, my first ABM program, I worked as a full funnel account executive. So I was doing my own sourcing of pipeline. I was working the deal and I was actually managing the account. So what I had was the ability to send an email and organize a database. So again, in that context, the other thing I should mention, we had a trade deal with a bakery. So I could actually, on my way to go visit an account, I could pick up cookies. So that was like my budget for my first ABM program in reality. I think for most modern companies, they have a CRM, they've got marketing automation. So really it is truly, how do I organize my data to understand who I'm going after? Next piece would be, what are my distribution channels that I have available? You can use a lot of free channels. Prime example, you can go connect with all your target accounts on LinkedIn and post content organically. It's time consuming, but it's free. And now you've got a distribution channel that's your LinkedIn organic content that goes directly to your target accounts. So it's distribution. Next piece would just be like, what's your destination? What are you pointing people to? What's the content? So again, that's not necessarily a tech stack, but it is resources. You have to have somebody that can create content for you that's specific and personalized and nuanced. And then lastly, we think about it from a perspective of direction. So how do we track that these accounts are moving closer towards becoming an account? That could be as simple as a Calendly when you're getting started, of like, they booked a call or they didn't. Again, using organic social, they've engaged in our content. They're showing up every day. They're starting to leave comments. Maybe they shoot you a message. Again, it doesn't have to be overly complicated. As long as you can answer the four Ds, which again are data, distribution, destination, and direction. Who are we going after? How are we getting in front of them? What are we sending them? How do we track it? If you can answer those four questions, you can build an ABM program.
Data, distribution, destination. What was the last one?
Direction. We needed a D. So it's just tracking. Like, how do you track it?
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So there are plays that we can do with our own internal resource. And is that something, like, if we're thinking about setting up for our own B2B company, that our sales team can do? Is it something our marketing team should do? Is it something they should kind of club together on? Or
yeah. I've talked about this a lot in the past few months, is this idea that your first step to ABM is actually activation. So it's, how do you activate the sales team? To really oversimplify an ABM program, you've got three core stages. Stage one is marketing, warming up the accounts so that they are brand aware, they're solution aware, they're problem aware, they feel the pain, they're like, I need a solution. There comes a point where you can see, okay, they're actually in a point where they could be interested in buying our solution. That's where you would get sales involved. So there's some kind of a trigger. The one that I like to mention as an idea is like, a target account is your pricing page, product page, schedule a call page, but they didn't book a call. Probably a good signal that they may be interested in your services. Gives you a good reason to reach out. Once that handoff has happened and sales is now involved in closing this account, then the question becomes, how do we, marketing and sales, work together to then bring the deal to an actual close and they become a customer? So those are the three core stages. Generally speaking, where ABM is going to fail is at that second stage. It's the sales marketing handoff. It's the sales marketing alignment piece. It's the tale as old as time. So I recommend starting there and figuring out, what's our sales handoff process? Because if you can figure that out and you figure out what your trigger point is, then the job of marketing becomes, how do I drive more accounts into our trigger point? And then also, how do we optimize post-trigger? So again, if you're getting started, it's going to be harder in the front end, because it's way easier for marketing in a silo to go build this big program and then come to sales later and be like, look at this beautiful thing that I built. And what sales is going to be like, why would we do anything with that? Like, yeah, we've been working for the past quarter to try to generate opportunities and you've not done anything for us. In reality, you were building this big ABM program. They just didn't know about it, or they heard about it. They didn't see anything. So sales often thinks week to week, marketing thinks quarter to quarter or year to year. So if you haven't helped sales in the past couple of weeks, they're not going to trust you. So again, starting at this point and saying, how do we operationalize list segmentation and outbound for right fit accounts if at our product pages, our pricing page, our schedule call page, or high intent content pages? And I don't mean like they download an ebook, but if you look at your deals, and this is something where potentially a hockey stack could come in, if you see something where there are specific content assets that 90% of your deals have viewed and read before they actually schedule a call, you might use that as a trigger point. I don't recommend it universally, but you may have some nuances in your organization. Start there, figure out that process, and then go build the actual ABM program.
Got it. Cool. So let's take a little step back. We got into some tactical plays there. Let's take a little step back. Let's imagine that perhaps we are a fairly early stage software company. Maybe sometimes I use this as an example. We're in the calendar scheduling space because that's all that can pop into my mind right now. But we're in a tight niche, right? Maybe we're in the construction space. So we've mapped out kind of some dream accounts. We've probably not got the biggest niche because we're not Calendly, we're not Revenue Hero, Chili Piper. We've got quite a well carved out target market, and maybe we've built out like we're not going to go crazy. We've built out like 50 dream accounts that we'd love to work with. Maybe we have like internally we've not got a ton of resources, so maybe we have like one seller, one marketer, and then the rest is like our team building the product. Yep. Where do we start? Like, what is the minimum amount of cash this team needs, first off? And what kind of amount of time are they going to need to allocate as well, like say on a monthly basis or weekly basis?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's a couple of thoughts, because we've actually worked with some really early stage companies in which they didn't even have a marketer and a seller. It was like a founder and then the product team. And the founder was like marketing and sales. So where we started with them is it's three tools that are all free. So you use a tool called Propensity. Propensity is they frame themselves up as ABM for small teams. So they do have a paid tier, but on their free tier, you actually get access to the ability to build target account list and see third-party intent data. So you can actually do, based on their free tier, is map out your entire account list, understand these are the topics that they're surging on, or these are the competitors that they're looking at, and they'll actually give you 100 accounts on a weekly basis. So you can export that account list, and you can upload that over into Apollo. With Apollo, you can build personas. So you can actually then take that account list, filter by your predetermined persona, and now you've got an account list that actually has contact-enriched data. Through Apollo, you can do outbound sequencing. And on the free tier, you can do up to 2 sequences that are fully automated. I don't necessarily recommend that all the time. If you end up actually seeing value from it, you can move up in tier and invest in a $60 a month tool that's month to month, where you can pay for the year and get I think it's down to $50 a month at that point. But you want to create some form of an outbound cadence that is manual, automated, social engagement, sometimes the occasional call. I saw a post, I think it was from Kyle Coleman a couple of days ago, that in his first 90 days, he got 1,164 emails, but 3 cold calls. I know people hate on cold calling, but if you want to break through, do the things that people don't want to do. And then from there, you can use another tool called Warmly, and Warmly provides you website tracking. So you can actually see at an account level on a free tool what accounts are showing up on our website. So when you factor all those pieces together, you've now got third-party data that is showcasing these accounts might be in market for a solution like yours. And if you're early stage, they don't know that you exist. So the goal here is to make sure that they know that you exist and that you are a viable solution. You can then use Apollo to get the right people to reach out to and actually sequence them. And you can use Warmly to understand what accounts are hitting your website and then re-engage one-to-one based on that data point. And again, some people are like, oh, that's not a fully, it's all free tools. Like, of course, it's not a fully connected and perfectly attributable data. It's scrapping. It's the company I'm building. But if you're an early stage startup that has almost no website traffic or very little website traffic, and you start to see accounts that have never looked at you before showing up on your website 2 weeks after you started a sequence, I don't think it's a crazy assumption that your sequence got them to the website. So that's one option. The other option, I'll make it much more simple and just kind of easier. If you are a founder that is building a problem for a space that you previously had been in, build a referral program and like just get referrals. You can identify your target accounts and then do relationship mapping through LinkedIn. Sometimes this is potentially manual, but you can figure out who in my network works at the target accounts that I want to work in, and then actually map those relationships. And you just do it in an Excel spreadsheet, and you reach out and you just try to get on a calendar and help people. And you frame it up more as like customer research. I did this for Scrappy ABM. I had 50 customer calls to understand the framing of my products and services before I launched the company. 10 of those calls turned into sales conversations, and then 5 of them became clients. So I had a 10% conversion rate just going to my network and saying, hey, here's what I'm doing. Is this the right thing that you would recommend doing based on your current situation? So like those are the two playbooks that are not super complicated or tech heavy. They're just hard. It just takes time.
When you did that for your organization with those 50 or so accounts you mapped out, was there much science to it when you were kind of putting together? Because I know a lot of businesses I speak to, when I ask about, especially early stage, when I ask like, what's your ideal client profile? It's very vague, not crisp. So I think a lot of companies, when they're framing up their ABM, could do with some help, but I'd love to know what you did.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, you know, I think the referral program is, like we had mentioned, like this is for the example of a calendar company in the construction space. Like that would be what I would consider a vertical specific program, because you only serve these kinds of accounts. Whereas I don't necessarily know that I was running ABM. I was like, I'm pretty confident that I could help these people at these kinds of organizations. Let me just reach out. So I would not say it was necessarily a quote unquote strategic ABM approach. It was more, I didn't reach out to other agencies because I wasn't trying to sell to agencies. I reached out to in-house marketers, largely at B2B tech companies that had anywhere from 1 to 5 internal marketers, because I thought that was kind of where we were going to land best. Turns out, I think that is where we land best. 90% of our client base is reflective of that. So that's where I started and said, these are our service offerings. Does this make sense? So it was not necessarily this super well thought out strategic approach. Again, we're talking really early stage. A lot of this is just Sangram Verje, big fan of him. He said, your strategy early is execution, because you don't know what you don't know. So you just need to go get enough reps in to actually get some data flowing through your system to say, like, these accounts worked, these didn't. Why is that? And then you're reflective on what is and isn't working. But you can't reflect on what is and isn't working if you aren't doing anything. So, like, get started with something and then refine from there.
Nice. Nice. Like those examples. So we've got using, was the tool called Propensity?
Or Propensity? Yeah, so the three tools, Propensity, Apollo, Warmly.
Nice. So that's basically mapping out some target accounts, getting some data together, using Apollo to then build some email sequences to them, and then working out from Warmly kind of what traffic, what visitors from those accounts are hitting your site. And then I'm guessing doing some more outbound to the ones that are spending more time on key pages on your site.
Exactly. And again, if we think back to that 4D framework, data is the most important piece. And if you're early stage, you just don't have that much data. That's first party. So you have to find out where you can get your data from somewhere.
Mm. Yeah, especially like you say, if you don't have a ton of cash to invest in ads and driving that traffic to your site, if there's some quick wins like you mentioned there, then marketing team should be all over this. And then secondly, the referral program. I mean, that's smart, right? Like mapping out who of those accounts you want to break into, and then working out if you or anyone on your team is connected to any of those folks that might be worth a conversation on LinkedIn, and then reaching out to them by whatever means possible.
Exactly.
Cool. So those sound super scrappy. Is there like a stage that's like one notch up?
Yeah. So I really love to focus for a lot of people their first ABM program around either closed lost or existing customers, because one, you're going to get faster results here because it's largely going to be focused on first party data. And additionally, you know, on both the closed loss program and a customer level program, you can get really specific in the content that you're creating because you have a greater understanding based on firsthand experience engaging with that account. So you can get, again, very specific, very personalized, very nuanced in the outreach and in the content that you create. So this is not necessarily more advanced in like your outreach and your distribution channels. It's more advanced in the personalization from a content perspective. The inevitable ideal state for an ABM program that we help a client build, or that you build using our framework, is that your distribution channels should largely inevitably stay the same because your audience lives in the same places, and your tracking component should largely stay the same because you're tracking in the same ways. What ends up changing out is the data piece. So who are we going after? What's our trigger and how do we message those people? And then what content do we send to them? So that's why you focus on the framework. And again, by focusing on closed lost, you have some of the best data that you're going to get access to. Your distribution channels are very unique distribution channels because you've already had one-to-one conversations with these people. They should be familiar with you. Plus, you can run ads up against the buying committee that you've already identified using LinkedIn, or depending on your current level of ad spend, if you have the HubSpot ad extension, plus you've had a $50,000 ad spend in Google, you can actually do target account list based advertising in Google through HubSpot. So you can actually really specifically target based on your closed loss. And then those are your distribution channels. The content, again, you should know why they didn't buy from you. The goal here is to re-engage by overcoming the objection or using any news or anything that's happened recently to those organizations to showcase why you're now a better fit. Again, the tracking components are website engagement, booked calls, and then actual opportunities generated. So again, not complexity in the data or the distribution, but it's more how do you get personalized in the content and organize the effective data that you have today very well.
Can you give us an example on a closed loss campaign, perhaps for yourself or one of your clients, on like how long? Because I'd imagine I'm thinking it, so I'm sure audiences as well. Like, how long do you leave it until they're closed loss? Because obviously, we don't want to be knocking on the door a day after they didn't buy or a week after. I imagine there's a bit of time you got to leave. And then, likewise, how do you, you touched on it a bit then, the kind of message and channel that we should think to reach back out?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll give two examples. One is for Scrappy ABM, because we've now existed long enough that we've actually got a decent bit of closed loss. Don't get me wrong, we close at about a 35% rate, but that means that there's 65% that don't become customers that we can re-engage. So in my context, a lot of the early deals that I was selling were like 30 to 45 day engagements. So I actually reach out a quarter later. So again, I say, hey, you know, you've oftentimes something that's like, I really like the idea. I think we'll try to build it in-house. That's, I don't generally lose to another competitor. I lose to, we can do this in-house. Because I'll be really blunt and honest. What we do is not that complicated. Like, it's just the right foundation and the right fundamentals. We're more of a time saver than anything else. And we can just do it right faster. It's like, that's my value proposition. So again, people will often say, oh, I think we can build this in-house. I'll follow up a quarter later, and we've seen a 20% response rate, and that response rate is actually still closing at our standard conversion metrics based on, you're right, we totally thought we were going to be able to get this knocked out in-house. Other priorities came up. We still think this is something important, but we'd like to outsource it to you to get it done in like 30 to 45 days, and then it's done. Mm-hmm. So in that context, it's based on the implementation timeframe. They thought they could get it done in-house in 30 to 45 days. They didn't. I followed up about a month and a half after it was supposed to be done. It's still not even gotten started. So I can now start with them. That makes sense. Another client, generally speaking, in their industry, they do annualized contracts. So it doesn't make sense to follow up 3 months after, because it's like, hey, you hate your new product. They're locked into a contract. So what we did in that context is we waited about 6 to 8 months for a different client. And what we focused on is we were able to bucket their closed loss reasons into really three core reasons. And we addressed with personalized messaging around, one was a lack of feature set. That was the main reason they lost opportunities. Well, this client had done 18 product updates in 6 months, and they had a lot of the features that they were previously lacking, plus specific integrations that were lacking in some of their competitors that were important for their customers. So again, they could go back to the reason they lost it, that specifically cited, you're lacking this integration, you're lacking this feature, and come back and say, we now have this. This was the reason we didn't move forward previously. Are there any other reasons that you wouldn't move forward with us now? Again, that's not the exact messaging, but that was kind of the core of it, is like, you said no previously because of these reasons. We now have solved for these reasons. Is this enough to re-engage in a conversation? Yes or no? Again, they actually had about a 25% response rate to that. And they have a longer sales cycle, and that's a program we've launched recently. So I don't know the exact revenue amount that's coming out of that. But again, think about the implementation timeframe and the standard contracts in your industry. And then based on that, I would do like, I would reach out probably 3 to 4 months before their contract is supposed to expire to re-engage in the conversation.
I imagine a lot of B2B companies are leaving a lot of money on the table when it comes to these strategies, especially if their sales team have like quite a high churn rate and things like that. I imagine a lot of these closed loss deals just get lost in the ether. And then especially if your sales team are turning over at a fast rate, the pipeline almost disappears.
Yeah. And it's one of those things of, you know, one of the things that we look at with all of our clients as a part of like our upfront audits are the existing sales processes and the data that's documented. Because what I just referenced is like, you need to have documented closed loss reasons. Too many sales teams don't do that. And like, admittedly, as a founder-led seller, I'm probably not great about that either. So like, I need to actually start documenting it myself. But especially if you have a larger sales team, like sales team data entry, everybody hates it. And it's often people hate it because they don't see the benefit and the value of it. But if you built a closed walls program that showcased, hey, we can actually automate the re-engagement and list segmentation, so all you have to do is follow this process and you'll see a 25% re-engagement rate in pipeline. And then you're following your standard conversion metrics. Like that becomes a foundational program that actually you can start to rely on for revenue. I'll give a quick example of turning it over user gems. They use user gems themselves. They're able to source 13% of their pipeline through champion tracking, but it results in 23% of their revenue. So they have nearly a quarter of their revenue, not guaranteed, but it's been holding for like a couple of years at that level. So they just know, okay, we can plan for this revenue to be here because it is historically showcased that it will be. And now we need to stack three other programs on top of it that can get the other 25-ish percent, but we've got this. And again, I just think if you could build a closed loss program or a customer expansion program that is highly repeatable, it showcases your ability to actually forecast revenue that is data-driven versus kind of the, let me lick my finger and stick up in the air and see where the wind blows to make my forecasting projections.
Yeah. We had Trinity on the show a few months back, super smart marketer, VP of marketing at User Gems. And she shared some ideas, like you say, around champion tracking. Like if you're, if the folks that you're dealing with, perhaps you're dealing with a VP of marketing at a tech company, they leave, and then tracking them into their new organization and how to kind of follow marketers that you've built rapport with into other organizations and kind of drive pipeline and drive new leads from that. So yeah, sound advice. In terms of actually following up with these closed loss deals, be it kind of standard deals or be it deals that you didn't win, perhaps because you lacked a feature, you lacked something, but you've made a note of it. Is there a way that you've had more success with kind of reaching back to them, i.e. is it over email, over call? Does it matter that much?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So there's a couple of components to this. One, I would highly recommend that to the best of your ability, have the same seller reach out. What you want to do is not focus in on, hey, it's been 3, 4, 5 months. Should we hop on a call again? But what you want to focus on is, hey, last time we talked, I know you ended up going with a different vendor, or I know you ended up not moving forward because the vendors you were looking at were lacking features and you're probably still searching for a solution. We made some recent product updates that address some of the concerns that you had last time. I just didn't even know if you were aware, but I hope this might be helpful as you're looking at potentially finding the right solution for this for your organization. Again, you just link out to like the blog post that you likely did or the whatever the release was that is the feature. They will not read it, but they will see the headline and be like, oh shoot, they did it. And again, what you then do from there is ideal is you have a lookalike client that you can build a case study around that showcases they made the switch, they did the thing. And you can then showcase the results that they experience as a result of making the switch or using the new feature set specifically and trying to call that out. And again, is that hard? Yeah. But if you think about maybe you have an existing case study and what it's going to require you to do is add a specific paragraph that calls out, this is how this client uses this feature. And this was their life. Like this was their result. Ideally it's hard numbers, but it might be a quote that's like, using this feature dramatically decreased our time focusing on these tasks. Like ideally it's hard numbers, but often most organizations are not able to get hard numbers. So if you can showcase something better, then that's a way that you can follow up that is showing these are the benefits of making this change. So again, showcasing the products and the features that have been updated, showcasing case studies and testimonials that are of what life looks like after using this feature. And then the other thing is, like, it doesn't have to all be specific to the reason that you didn't engage them. You might be hosting something else. You might be hosting a webinar. You might be going to an event. Like, trying to figure out how to weave in other touch points that are not exclusively focused on, hey, you didn't buy for this reason. Now we're going to hammer you for 45 days with this reason that we can now overcome this objection. Like, it's a starting point, but it shouldn't live there. It's now how do we rebuild the relationship? And it's maybe making them aware that why you didn't buy previously has now been solved, and we'd love to have another conversation.
Nice, like it. So again, that closed loss campaign doesn't sound overly expensive. It's more about setting up systems in place and having procedures and frameworks rather than spending a load of cash.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it literally for no dollars. Like, it, not no dollars. I mean, you've got your tech costs that are already in place, but I mean, like, no incremental dollars. The only thing that I can think through that may require some cash would just be ad spend, or if there is, has been turnover in the organization since the last engagement, then you're going to look for somehow to enrich your data to figure out who the right people are in that organization moving forward. Might be a use case for user gems, not sponsored, but like, that's actually what they do. So all that to say, this can be done at little to no additional incremental cost other than the time to build the process, build the content, and then get it going.
Got it. And is there like a stage above this where it's going to cost you a bit more, but you'll get kind of a bit of a better impact once you're ready?
Yeah, it's a great question. Again, if we think back to the 4D framework of data distribution, destination, direction, really the only incremental cost that you're going to have here would be just adding additional distribution channels. So right. Again, as long as you've got the right data sources, then there's no cost on data. As long as you have the right distribution channels that are getting in front of these audiences and getting their response, there's no cost there. Unless, again, you try to break into more of the decision committee and you're showcasing awareness level content across the entire decision committee through an ad set, like, there's going to be cost there. For content, it's the cost of whatever it costs you to produce the content. You might work with an agency, you might do that in-house. So those are your costs there. And then lastly, it's just the direction. How do we track these things? That might, depending on your organization, maybe you have a horrible CRM and that has no ability to track anything. You may need to get the technology in place that can help you track it, which would be something where like a Warmly comes in, because Warmly is all around website engagement and website tracking. So again, the framework works. It's just a matter of now, what do we slot into those different segments and where are we weak in certain areas? And then how do we bolster that? Those are going to be your costs.
Legend. Anything we haven't covered in terms of problems that you might face while setting some of these things up? Any common issues that you see B2B companies run into?
Yeah, we talked a lot about what I would refer to as like your starting points. So like, these are how you get everything started. Like, inevitably, you want to move to, like, you've referenced it a couple times, like, what's the next level up? So like, admittedly, this is all, if you think about an account progression model, which I'll define very quickly, it's like the awareness stage, the initial engagement, the meaningful engagement, the re-engagement, there's a lot of engagement here, and then the conversion stage. So like, those are the five, what we would refer to as our kind of standard, and obviously you nuance it depending on your organization. Everything we've been talking about right now is meaningful engagement to re-engagement stage. They are what I would refer to as demand capture playbooks, where you get sales involved in capturing existing demand that you've generated in your target account list. So at some point, you've got to go higher up funnel. Like, you have to make the accounts aware that you exist and that you solve their problem. So again, if you think back to that 4D framework, it's the same thing. It's just, instead of the goal being a meeting on the calendar, it's they've hit our website and they know that we exist. Like, that's awareness stage. That's a goal. Because if people don't know that you exist, they can't buy from you. And people hate it when I say that. But like, it's just the truth. So you have to run some form of an awareness campaign to make sure your target accounts know that you exist. And then when you move to initial engagement, like, they need to be educated on how you help them and why they would need to buy from you. Meaningful engagement is then those product, those pricing, those scheduled call pages, re-engagement where you get your sales team involved. So again, it's just playbooks all the way through these different stages so that you build a full ABM program that generates pipeline. Then you want to actually build programs that accelerate your pipeline. And then you want to build programs that expand your customer base. So like, you take this same concept and you implement it in those three functional areas of your business, and you will have a machine that actually repeatably prints revenue, which is what everybody wants. It just takes years. We just don't have the patience for it.
That's it.
Sorry, I get heated about that.
Don't worry, man. Look, Mason, I really appreciate you sharing insights, ideas, and practical stories. I can tell you're passionate about the ABM space, but I appreciate you actually walking through not only what you've done for your own campaigns with your own organization, but also for clients and making it super practical. So I want to thank you for coming on the show, and please do share more about how everyone tuning in can learn from you more about Scrappy ABM and the best way to get in touch.
Yeah, there are three places. So the first is, I would say, LinkedIn. I am unfortunately all over LinkedIn. So I post probably too much, but If you like ABM, and also I have the cutest daughter in the world, I post about those two things all the time, probably too much. I'm the intersection of account-based marketing and babies. The second place would be the Scrappy ABM podcast. So I actually had a great guest that talked through the intersection of ABM and SEO that went out yesterday. It's a great episode. So if you want highly practical playbooks around how to build an ABM program using different tactics and channels and getting really deep and all of those things, that's where I would go. And the third place is the Scrappy ABM website. Right now, I will be very candid and transparent. It's currently a one-page website, but we are doing a pretty significant overhaul to add a lot more content and a lot more information. And on the website, you can actually subscribe for the weekly newsletter that goes out and sends out all the podcast information. So if you want podcasts delivered directly to your inbox, you can also subscribe there. So those would be the three places I'd go. Look up Mason Cosby on LinkedIn. Look up Scrappy ABM wherever you listen to podcasts. And Google Scrappy ABM, you'll see a very bright orange website. And hopefully you see my dumb face everywhere. If you don't, somebody else is trying to own Scrappy ABM and I got to fix it.
Good man. We'll put links to those below. Mason, well, thank you once again. Enjoyed the chat.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Cheers, dude. We've got to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, Revenue Hero and Factors AI, for sponsoring today's episode. And if you want to join thousands of legends enjoying past episodes or to try out our daily B2B marketing tips emails, head over to breakingb2b.com. And we want to thank you, the audience, for tuning in. Catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.